Hello, and welcome to the WWIA Podcast. We're honored to have you join us in our mission to bring honor, connection, and healing to America's combat wounded Purple Heart heroes. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, we welcome you. If you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. Please be sure to tell others about our podcast and leave us a review if you're enjoying what you're hearing. Our event hosts play a vital role in our mission to bring healing and restoration to our combat wounded veterans. Their selfless generosity and hard work behind the scenes truly set the stage for a memorable and life-changing time in the field, on the water, or around the dinner table or campfire. On today's episode, WWIA founder and CEO John McDaniel welcomes one of our remarkable and long-standing event hosts to the show, Mr. Bruce Schreiner. Bruce Schreiner is the co-host of the North Dakota Wild Pheasant Hunt in Garrison, North Dakota. This is a memorial event dedicated to Bruce's brother Glenn, who also hosted the event and had a deep reverence and respect for veterans until his passing in 2019. Bruce has lived in Garrison his entire life and has three children and five grandchildren. He doesn't just live in the community, he's an active part of it, having had a wonderful career at Garrison State Bank and Trust for 38 years, retiring in 2021 as president. He's also been a member of the Garrison Fire Department and Rescue Squad since 1984, serving as chief from 1993 until 2025, and is also active in the State Firefighters Association. He further serves on the local Chamber of Commerce, Garrison Area Improvement Association, and Better Living for Garrison. His family are fourth-generation farmers, and his two nephews now operate the family farm, carrying on a proud and storied tradition. This is an outstanding episode that we know you'll enjoy, so let's go ahead and jump into the conversation with John and Bruce now.
Hi, I'm John McDaniel, founder and CEO of the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation, and this is our podcast, Honor, Connect, and Heal. And so today, here we are in December of 2025, and it's my honor to introduce to you a very special person who has been helping the foundation. He and his community in Garrison, North Dakota, have been helping the foundation coming up on 9 years by providing an amazing wild pheasant hunt in that part of the country. Welcome to the program, Bruce Schreiner.
Thank you.
How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Good. Are you at home right now in Garrison?
I am.
You know, I looked at it on the map today, and I was just kind of like, it gives me an opportunity to kind of put myself maybe in your shoes for a moment. I love the Dakotas, first off. I mean, it's sparsely populated. I've driven through the Dakotas several times. And I love it. And of course, you know, the history is just rich, especially if you're like I am, a student, who likes to learn about, American history, and especially, the American Indian Wars. I just, and Lewis and Clark and all that. I mean, that's like, man, that's right up your alley there. But you have the Missouri River like right to your south, don't you?
Yes. 3 miles south of Garrison is Lake Sakakawea, which is on the Missouri River system. The lake was formed when they built the Garrison Dam back in the early 50s for flood control. So the lake was formed then, and it's a great recreation area.
Let me guess, there's walleye in there.
Premier walleye fishing in the world.
Is it really?
Yeah.
How big? See, we fished. I didn't know that. Now that I do, you guys are in trouble. I love fishing walleye. I grew up fishing walleye in Wisconsin. But we have an event. You probably saw it. There in Ohio on Erie, and I have a couple of fishing events there. And they're pulling. I went to one of those events, and they were catching like 28 inch. close to sometimes 30 inch walleye. Now that's a great lake, you know.
Yeah.
But I was like dumbfounded because of how large those fish were. Like when I grew up, if you caught a walleye that was, let's just say it was 22 or 23 inches, that's a big walleye.
Yeah.
You know. But you say, you know, it's a world class, world renowned fishery. That's that warms my heart.
Yep. And there's lots of 28, 30, 32 inch walleye
in that lake. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So that means there's a lot of bait.
Yep.
And that lake's probably got some good structure to it and all of that. I mean, that's phenomenal. Plus wild pheasants, right? I mean, you guys. I hunted. I have a picture. I'm going to pull it. The audience won't be able to see it, but let me grab it. Okay, so this is a picture. I don't know if you can see that or not, but that's my dad and one of my best buddies, Dixon. Me in the middle, and he was my Labrador Grizzly. Sir Grizzly Clifton, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7 or 8 wonderful pheasants, right, that we got in North Dakota where we hunted, and it snowed, so you know the snow had fallen. There's a little bit of snow, but those were all wild birds. My dad was a big time pheasant hunter, and which kind of made me a big time pheasant hunter, and you know, I just loved it. I mean, that there's something to be said about, you know, chasing those critters. They're just one of the most beautiful game birds on the planet. They taste great. And you guys have been doing that now with us for like 8 years. Oh my gosh. Look at that.
Here's a picture of this year's hunt. One of the days.
And what is there, like 25, 30 birds on that table? Hard to say.
The first day
it's a pile.
First day we had 60 birds, and the second day we had 50 some birds.
That's incredible. Are the guys going home with pheasant? I would imagine they
are. They get to take our daily possession limit is 3 in North Dakota.
Yeah,
and we basically hunt 4 days, so they all get to take 12 birds home with them.
Oh my gosh. And you guys got guys that are handling that are dog handlers,
yeah.
Too are they pointers, flushers, or a combination of the both, or what?
Combination, Some labs, a lot of them are labs, but there are a couple pointers and stuff in there as well.
Yeah, you know, my dad, we hunted behind, believe it or not, Irish setters. My dad was a big fan of the setters, and they're typically pointing dogs. But he trained Brandy, which was his dog, to be more of a flusher because we were in Wisconsin and hunted a lot of farmland. Mm-hmm. You know, if a dog will lock up on a bird in a corn row. 9 times out of 10, by the time the hunter gets up there, that bird's gone. So it's better to have them hunt close and flush. That's been my experience. You know, the labs are real good at that. And I know there's pointing labs today, but you know, I don't want to get into a big discussion about all of that. But so love the pointers too. I've had a couple pointers and a couple of retrievers in my day, but I'm sure the guys just absolutely love it. I've heard nothing but great things. So tell us a little bit, Bruce, about how you started getting, you know, involved with the foundation. And then we're going to talk, you know, about you. I've scribbled a bunch of notes because I can't wait to learn more about you because you've got a really interesting, history going there. But tell us about how the event started, who the key players are. And then if you don't mind, you know, what I'd love to hear about is the impact that the work has had on you. I think we all know the work, the impact, that the heroes receive from our work. But I always am really interested in hearing about the impact on you personally, your community, your family, that kind of thing. So if you don't mind, sir.
Sure. The event was started with my brother Glenn and Roy McKenzie. They started the very first pheasant hunt, and I do not know exactly what precipitated them to start the event. I was still working at the bank at that time full time. So I, the first couple of years, I didn't have a whole lot of involvement with the planning or any of that. And then unfortunately in 2019, my brother passed away, and we decided as a family that we wanted to continue the event. And I was just getting ready to start retirement. I retired at the end of 21. So I stepped in and worked with Roy to continue the hunt. As it is today, my brother lived out on the farm, and that's where we headquarter the hunt out of. We have very generous neighbors out there that'll allow us to hunt on their land.
Yeah, I love that.
And we've also got 6 or 7, 8 guides that have dogs that just love the event, and they look forward to it every year. So we've got the land, we've got the dogs. The foundation is very good with getting 5 heroes to come for the hunt, and it's just a wonderful experience for everybody. There's usually 20 of us or so, that including the heroes that make up the party for the hunt. And like I said, it's just, from our perspective, it's just really gratifying when you get to visit with the heroes and hear their stories and watch them interact with normally 4 other heroes that they've never met before, and how they interact with each other. It's just really gratifying.
It is, even for me to this day, you know, some 20 years into this, you know, I still host an event up there at in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, you know, a place we call Camp Hackett. And same thing. I mean, just watching the heroes interact amongst each other and sharing stories, and you know, we're further away from the war than we were when we started. And I say the war, you know, the war went on, you know, in Iraq, Afghanistan for 20 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're further away from that now than we were back then. And I think the guys in general are in a much better position to let their guards down. You know, we still got a ways to, you know, to go. There's still, you know, some things that, you know, we all need to do to, you know, get past some of it. But that fireside chat, that idea of being, you know, delivered and going to a place that you've never been and people you've never met, and these people are going to bring their A game for you as a way of saying thanks for what you did. And then you're going to get to sit around a fire that night you know, talk about what you did, and you know, not just what you did in the pheasant fields, but maybe what you did over there. And it's just the gears like almost immediately mesh, you know, and with them. Yeah. And then when you're an active participant in that, mostly, like, you know, just absorbing it. That's what I do. I don't, you know, I try to stay out of the limelight, you know, as much as I can. Sometimes I can't avoid doing my job as the host, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always impressed and feel like there's a great sense of gratification to that, in that process. And I can't really explain it. It's just, you know, the only word I could ever come up with to describe it is the magic, you know, what's happening around, you know, the fire pit, if you will. But it's really cool. I'm glad that And all the events share one of those similar things, but or similar set of circumstances or outcomes, if you will. But let me ask you, tell us about Krause's market and that lash up there, because I met Roy McKenzie, great American. You know, he and your brother Glenn were the, you know, co-founders, and now you've stepped in there. But tell us about Krause's Market, because they've been very generous to us.
Yeah. Krause's Market originates in Hazen, North Dakota, which is 55 miles southwest of Garrison. Mm-hmm. Our local Super Value store owners were looking to retire. Krause's ended up buying them, and they also bought a market down in Washburn, which is 35 miles south of us. And they are just terrific community people. Roy was their meat cutter here in Garrison. So when him and my brother started the hunt, they went to Krause's, and Krause's jumped on board to help sponsor it. They supply product for the meals and a banquet that we have between them and their vendors. So they're a huge part of making the event happen and making it happen so that it's not overly burdensome on the cost.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Krause's Market.
Yes.
Yeah. God bless you. Thanks for all that you guys have done. You know, I scribbled some things. I was, you know, last couple of days, I was just, like I said, I was trying to have a tendency to want to like get to know as much as I can about people I have not met. And once upon a time I had met everybody, you know, and it's just not possible. I will come meet you, one of these days. I'm bound and determined to get up there. I can't wait to see it. It's one of the, you know, top three events in my, from a selfish perspective, that I want to go to, not just to hunt the pheasants, but to be up in that part of the country and to, you know, meet your family and friends and your community and say, thank you. I mean, I'm committed to doing that, just not happening on the timeline that I wanted it to for lots of reasons. But,
well, you come up some July and I'll, I'm not a fisherman, but July is probably the best month for walleye fishing.
So I might be bringing my two boys. They would love that. That's a great invitation. I appreciate that. That might be happening sooner than later. I actually prefer, to be honest with you, you know, I actually prefer, Bruce, to do it like that, because if I rock up in an event, then I'm a distractor. You know, even though I keep my mouth closed most of the time, I'm a distractor to that event anymore. And I don't want that. So I would way rather do it in the summertime, you know, where we can, you know, wet a line and relax for a few days. And the boys and I could get to, you know, they would love it. I mean, there's so much cool stuff happening there. I appreciate that invitation. Be careful what you ask for.
No. I'd welcome you to come up and bring your boys.
That's cool.
That would be great.
So I have here, I wrote some things down here. So I'm a simple person. So I like to break things down into block and tackle, you know, the essence of things. I just have a tendency to want to do that. And so the things I wrote down about you are father, banker, fireman, farmer, and philanthropist. Those are the words that I'm, the labels, the stickers that I wrote down about you. And I understand you have three children and five grandchildren.
Yep.
Wow. So that's good. Any boys in that equation? You have three children. So tell me about them.
Two sons and a daughter.
Okay. Are the boys involved in the farm?
No. My oldest son was actually killed in a plane crash. So he was a farmer. He farmed west of Garrison. And my other son works in the oil fields, but does participate in the hunt.
Okay.
As he is allowed with his work schedule.
Okay.
He's got a daughter and a son, and my grandson is a senior in high school this year and looks forward to the hunt every year. So,
oh, that's great. That's great to have family involved, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. And then we've got a daughter that lives by Jamestown, North Dakota, which is a couple hundred miles away from here, but they have two daughters. They both live in Bismarck.
Okay.
One is married and one is engaged. So,
okay.
So,
always something going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Family's cool. Close. So we get to spend time with them.
Good. Good. So, banker, that's next. You were in banking for 38 years.
Yeah.
You were a banker.
Yeah.
And career as a banker culminated, if you will, as the president of a bank, right? They were a president of a bank.
Correct.
So I got to ask you, okay. So it's like, if you ask me, give me a snapshot of your day, my life and the day of, you know, with my professional work here, I could tell you, it would bore people, but I would tell you, but I always like to ask that question, you know, like, you're the when you were president of a bank, what give me a typical, you know, day in the life of, what kind of things is the president of a bank doing?
Well, first of all, I had a terrific crew underneath me. Approximately 35 employees, mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't need a whole lot of direction. Everybody knew what their jobs were and they did it. And that was kind of a legacy that came from the owner of the bank, as he passed down the torch. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was just making sure that everybody had what they needed, had the tools to do their job. And make sure that you were out in the community, making sure the community had the owner of the bank was very instrumental in, getting Garrison to where it is today. He was very big on the community and was always, as I started in the bank, he would come into my office all the time and say, okay, what does the community need next? What does the community need next? And that was how he did it. And his philosophy just kind of was passed down to me. And so yeah. I would make sure that if there were things going on in the community, how the bank could be involved with it.
That's great. Yeah. So I assume the bank, as a banker, there were lots of loans and things like this relative to farming and the community. Cause I'm guessing that Garrison, North Dakota is dominated by the agriculture industry. I'm guessing.
Yeah. And I'd say 85% of our business was ag related.
Yeah. Equipment loans, yep. Farm loan, you know, this yep. kind of thing. Yeah,
operating right on. Equipment, real estate.
Yep, you betcha. Awesome. So I also mentioned firemen. You were a chief, you know, volunteer firefighter. You know, tell us about that.
Well, when I started at the bank in 1984, my father was on the fire department and. I was asked to join. There was an opening. Mm-hmm. Garrison, our fire department is made up of 40 members, volunteers, all volunteers. And they had an opening and I was asked to join. So I joined and I don't know, a few years after that, I became one of the assistant chiefs. And then in 1993, when the chief retired, because he was moving out of town, I was asked to become chief. So I became chief, and they wouldn't let me out of it until last year in 2025. So I was chief for 32 years.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's a heck of a run right there, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Well, you must have been doing something right. You're either probably a really good cook and a great leader. You know, I was always amazed when I started, I had some friends that were firefighters, and I'd always ask them because, you know, it's just something I didn't do. But I reckon it's a lot like it's service, of course, especially as a volunteer, but it's probably a lot like what the average infantryman in the military goes through, which is, you know, life is essentially 99 minutes of sheer boredom interrupted by 1 minute of sheer panic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a good day is no fire, a bad day is a fire, you know?
Yep.
And you know, having to do your thing. But I imagine, you know, I see it all the time not infrequently do I see the fire truck in the parking lot of the Publix grocery store where I shop routinely near my house. And they're often going in there shopping for food. You know, which I think is great, you know, because I know they're going back and they're cooking, you know, they're cooking some big thing for everybody. You know, I mean, that's part of the deal, right? If you're going to, yeah. I don't know how long you stay on shift, but you know, the firefighters it's 24/7, 365, right? I mean, you're not waking up, you know, somebody's not calling you at home and saying, hey, come get your stuff on. When you're on duty, you're on duty, right? And if there's a fire, you're going to slide into your boots and run down the pole and get on the truck and go, right?
Yep. We're, like I said, we're a 40-member department, all volunteer. So we're basically on call 24/7, 365. When there's a emergency, we get paged out and away we go.
Cool.
Now a quick word from this episode's sponsor.
This WWI episode is sponsored by Able Now, a tax-advantaged savings program for people with disabilities. Learn more at ablenow.com. That's ablenow.com. So what is Able Now? Able Now is a national savings program designed specifically for people with disabilities. Able Now allows eligible individuals to save and invest money in tax-advantaged accounts without risking certain benefits such as SSI or Medicaid. So why does this matter for our wounded veterans? It matters because we live with our disabilities, our service-connected or combat-related disabilities, and that affects our health and our financial security. Able Now provides a tax-advantaged way to save for everyday and long-term needs while protecting eligibility for certain benefits. Funds in an Able Now account can be used for qualified disability expenses, including housing, transportation, healthcare, education, quality of life, and more. And here's the big news. Expanded eligibility started right now in 2026. So if your disability occurred before the age of 46, you may be qualified. So here's the call to action. If you're a wounded veteran or care for one, Able Now is worth learning about. Visit ablenow.com, that's ablenow.com, to see if you or your family member is eligible and start planning for a more secure future today. Thank you.
Okay, let's get right back into the episode.
All right, so now I got to ask you about farming. Because what I don't know is, what are you guys farming there? I mean, I could take a wild guess. I'm guessing corn and soybean, but those are just guesses. What is going on? I mean, you've been associated with in a farm, and so has your family for generations.
Yeah.
So tell us about what are you doing on the farm?
Okay. Well, my grandfather farmed. basically back in those days, it was, for us, it was durum. You know, that was strictly
was what?
Durum, which is a wheat.
Durum?
Yeah.
D-E-R-M?
D-U-R-U-M. What they make pasta out of.
I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah, that's
it's a type of wheat.
It's a type of wheat. It's a wheat that they make pasta out of.
I'll be not bread. Okay.
And that was basically how we grew. And then my father got into farming, and then we started growing, besides durum, we started growing some flax and sunflowers. Eventually,
what do you do with the sunflowers? Do they make sunflower seeds?
No, but we grew oil for oil. So
the oil is in the seeds?
Oil's in the seed.
Did you have to extract that, or export the seeds?
Yeah, we just harvested it and hauled to the elevator, and then they shipped it to wherever, and it went to a crushing plant, and then they turned it into sunflower oil.
I got to ask you, Bruce. You know the big silos that you see all over the place with big, the farms, like the, you know, sometimes they get the blue and white, they're different colors, but you know, they're monster.
Yep.
Some of them are huge, and they might have three or four of them. And you might even find a common place where there's, 10 of them or something, right?
Yeah.
Just monster silos.
Yeah.
What is going on in the silo? I've always wondered. I mean, what's going on there?
Usually the silos are mostly for dairy farms. That's usually where they'll store their feed, the corn and stuff. Ah. They feed them. You will find some beef farmers that will also have silos. And again, they store the feed in them.
Those are like, corn that got harvested.
Yeah.
We're not talking about sweet corn. We're just talking about corn that's going for feed for cattle.
Yeah.
And so they're climate controlled, or they're air. I mean, why do you need that?
We never had cattle, so I'm not exactly sure why, but that was just the silo seemed to be the way that they stored them. And I knew that they do have some temperature controls and stuff like that.
So they don't get rot and all this other crap.
Right.
Okay. So, all right. So I interrupted you. So sunflowers, what about today? Are you still doing the same thing?
No. Today, we don't grow durum anymore because it's a little bit finicky to raise quality wise. And if you don't have the quality, of course, it doesn't make good pasta. So, what my nephews who took over the farm after my brother, they grow wheat and they grow flax and they grow peas, dry edible peas.
Okay.
And soybeans, and canola are basically the main crops that we grow now.
Canola is in canola, like the canola oil?
Yep. That's another oil crop.
Okay. And what is it, a bean or something?
Soybeans.
Is that what canola is made from soy?
It's canola. Canola is, it's a real small seed, but again, it's oil, they crush it for oil.
Well, and that's where canola oil comes from. I'll be darned. I had no idea. Awesome. Now I got to ask you, are there, I'm guessing that in North Dakota you have white-tailed deer.
Yep.
And you got big white-tailed deer too, don't you?
Some. We have both white-tail and mule deer.
You got mule deer all over the state or just out west?
Started out west, but we actually have some mule deer in our area now.
Really?
They have migrated a little bit.
Wow. And what about fur bears? I mean, you got probably everything. I mean, I know you got coyotes.
Coyote, but and fox.
All of it. Salt deer.
Muskrat.
Yeah, exactly. You got all the water. You got all the ingredients.
Yep.
Are there still places where there's pockets of timber?
No. Up in the northeast corner of the state, they have some timber up there. But for the most part, we're all flat farmland. You get out to the west, and that's where there's the Badlands,
that's cool.
But in the center part of the state, not much for trees, just basically flat farmland.
What's the temperature like today?
Today it's about 20 degrees, but it's going to get cold here. The high tomorrow is -2, I think, and similar for Saturday. And then Sunday it warms back up, and they're talking 30s, close to 40 degrees first part of next week.
Do you got any snow on the ground right now?
Yeah, we've got probably 8 inches or so.
But that wind can just hawk through there, can it?
Yep.
Like I once was on a stretch of road in the Dakotas, and a storm came up, and it was a long time ago, so I don't recall. I know it was the winter time, and I don't recall checking the weather forecast or anything. I had some place to go. And so I was doing that, and this storm rolls up, and I was like, whoa, daddy, you got to get off this road, or this road is disappearing.
Yeah.
Like literally before my eyes, the road was disappearing and the drifts were happening, and it happened like that.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm telling you that wind had to be 40, 50 knots and or greater. It was just, whoa. So you get that sometimes there, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's no place to hide.
Like 3 days ago, we had 30-mile-an-hour winds with gusts up to 55.
Yeah, so, when that storm rolled through.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on. So the other thing I want to talk about here is, and I guess it dovetails back into our work with the combat wounded. You know, is you as a and your community really, you know, as a philanthropist, you know, doing good deeds, especially for, you know, in this case, our combat wounded, and those, and the great veterans that they are. Now, what's that mean? What's that mean to you? Like what do you take away when you get done with an event, right? What are you left with when the guys are back on the, you know, they leave the farm, they're heading back home? What's that like for you?
Again, I'd say it's very gratifying and humbling at the same time, because, you know, we've done this for 8 years and we've only had the same guide a couple times. So you're talking at least 4 fresh faces every year.
And do you like that? Is that good for you?
It's fantastic. As I'd like to see these guys come back, it's always nice to when a new group comes, because you make new friends, and you learn of new experiences, and again, it's just fantastic. When these guys leave, you start to appreciate everything that they had gone through in their career as a soldier of whatever branch
of
the army or branch of the service they were in. It's just, like I said, it's very humbling and gratifying to think back on what they went through so that we could enjoy what we enjoy today.
Well, that's patriotism, man. That's it right there. That defines it, as far as I'm concerned. Yep. I mean, I thought, you know, when I first started doing this, I thought to myself, I surely can't be the only guy on the planet that thinks this is a good idea. I mean, we're going to go hunting and fishing with these combat wounded veterans. What possibly could go wrong there?
Yeah.
You know, and to be a part of an organization that's still doing that, but doing that, you know, by a factor of 40 something, you know, across the country in these individual events, you know, well, you know, you're onto something right there, you know. I mean, because what I look at it like, Bruce, I say, okay, you know, it's not my opinion that matters. If you want it, I'll give it to you. But mostly it's what your customers say, you know, or your clients, however you want to, you know, phrase that. And that's our, in this case, our clients, the foundation's clients are the Purple Heart recipients. Yeah. And you know, they overwhelmingly they have nothing but great things to say about what we're doing. And but if it wasn't for you and your family and your you know extended community of support, this wouldn't be happening. I mean, if you think about waking up one day in Tupelo, Mississippi, and somebody says, you know, the phone rings and said, hey, you know, how would you like to go hunt pheasants in North Dakota? Go, heck yeah, I do. Are you kidding me? Like, when do I get to go do that? Yeah. And then they show up and then the people they don't know, they would never go to Garrison, North Dakota, probably ever in their life. You know, whether they're from California, Mississippi, the state of Washington, New York, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, we're delivering these guys as a package with leadership to a place they've never been. And people like you and your family and your community are going to open their arms and you're going to give them the best you got on that day.
Yeah.
That blows me away, man. That's philanthropy. That just blows me away. And I got to thank you. And I hope, you know, your community, some of them, your key players are listening to this, but I will tell you flat out, full stop, that it means a lot to them. I know it does, you know, even if some of them don't express it, but look at the smile on their faces, you know, look at the joy that it's bringing them. And, you know, the healing piece to this, I mean, can you imagine going off to some country, some place in the world, and you know you're 19, 20 years old, or whatever, however old you are, and you know you join the Army or the Marine Corps, you raise your right hand, you know, swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over you, and then you found yourself in some crap hole, you know, having to do deeds that nobody should have to do. And then you get wounded in the process, and now you're back on the block. You know, you can't take your uniform off because of the wounds you sustained. So you're no longer part of the thing, the one thing you wanted to be a part of. Now you're back on the block, just Joe Schmo. And what now?
Yeah.
You know, what now? And there's a big void there. They all say it. They all express it. You know, in one form or another, there's a void. And that void is, you know, a big part of me is now gone. Now, hey, granted, they got wounds and injuries sometimes that are horrific. You know, and that's one thing. You know, the stitches, the, you know, medication, the rehab, all of that, the physical side. But then there's this, you know, emotional side, this cognitive side. Where that just doesn't go away. And then, P.S., this big part of you is missing. It's just gone. And they want that back. They all say the same thing. You've probably heard it, man. They say, I would go back in a second, in a nanosecond. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
They would go back in a nanosecond to go do that.
Yeah.
Because it was, as odd as it sounds, it was comfortable.
Yeah.
It was what they knew. It was who they loved and what they loved to do. And that's gone.
Yep.
And so that transition back to quote unquote normal is a long road. And sometimes it's a lifetime road, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It takes a lifetime sometimes for these guys to readjust. But when people like you and your community don't ask anything in return, we're just going to ask you to have a good time and enjoy yourself. I might ask you to be polite and respectful, of course, but you know,
yeah.
go out there and have a great time. Get to know people. That feeling, you know, what you're left with when you walk away with that, when you get back on that plane and you get back on your couch at home and you're scratching your dog's chin and staring at the ceiling tiles, thinking about what just happened, that sense of, oh my gosh, they did that for me. Like if that's not validating, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
And I don't know I don't know who else, if anybody thinks of it that way, maybe not, but that's the way I see it. And I got to tell you, man, it's amazing. So I want to tell everybody out there in North Dakota and around everybody else who's listening, if you're involved in this work, you know, thank you from the bottom of my heart and from the bottom of a bunch of Purple Heart recipients, because, you know, it's pretty cool. You know, what you're doing is very, very awesome. So thank you.
You're welcome. And I can tell you that the group that we have that helps with the event and stuff, they all feel the same way. These guys come and they never complain. They tell us that they would go back and do it again. And they don't want us to feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
You know, they just, it's like I said, it's so heartwarming to listen to the heroes and what they've gone through, what they've done. Mm-hmm. And we relate it back to the fact that it's because of them that we enjoy what we enjoy today.
And, right.
And the group that we have that helps with this event are also appreciative of mm-hmm. of what they have done for us.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you know what you say is exactly right, you know, and we appreciate what they did. And but not only this generation, but I mean, as we know, many generations, you know, going back to the, you know, World War One, you know, World War Two, Korea and Vietnam, you know, those amazing Americans, many of them came home without such fanfare and without such welcome. You know, there wasn't these kind of, you know, people came home and were just really quiet about what they did.
Yeah.
You know. And that's why the Veteran Service Organization sprung up, you know, the VFWs, the American Legions, you know, this kind of thing. They sprung up because it was a place for the veterans to be able to go and do what?
Yeah.
Ish, break bread, you know, drink a beer, yeah. Share camaraderie, yeah. You know, this kind of thing. But they were done very quietly. They didn't know where else to go, you know, and how can you explain what you just did and had to go through to, you know, the average person? Well, you know, it's hard. It's difficult to do that, right?
Yeah.
I want to, before we close the program here, and I'm going to give you, Bruce, the last, you know, whack at the pinata here, but I have a picture in my hand. It's of you. And then there's two other people in the picture with a pile of pheasants on a table. I'm going to show it to you here.
Yeah.
Do you recognize that photo?
Yeah.
Okay. Who is the young man in? Is that your son?
That's my grandson.
That's your grandson. Yep. What's his name?
His name is Landon.
Landon.
He lives here in Garrison. Goes to school. He's a senior this year, but he has come out the last 4 or 5 years and mm-hmm. and hunts. We're fortunate that the weekend of the pheasant hunt is also where he has a break. He gets a couple days off,
mm-hmm.
so he doesn't have school, so he gets to come out and hunt the days with us, and mm-hmm. and really enjoys it. And it's been really fun to watch him interact with the heroes, because he's kind of a quiet to himself guy, but mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, these guys drag it out of him.
They do, man. Yeah. They'll get it. They'll get it out of you. There's no, you can't hide in that crowd, man.
Nope. And the gal in there is my wife. And she doesn't hunt, but she's out there helping get lunches ready and all of that. And
what's your wife's name?
Sue.
I was gonna say that looks like your daughter. I have to tell her that I said that, but that she doesn't look old enough to be your wife. And the other thing I was gonna say is whatever that WWI gear she's got in that camouflage shirt right there.
Yeah.
See that?
Yeah.
That is so cool. I never knew that garment existed.
That's another thing that Krause's do. They buy a hoodie like that every year for the Warriors, and then usually buy a few extra ones that get passed around to the people that are helping with the event. But that's another thing that Krause's provides for the heroes.
That's a good looking piece of kit right there. It always warms my heart when I see the foundation's logo on a piece of kit that I personally admire.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if I admire it or not. It just warms my heart to see, y'all taking leadership roles and the initiative and doing great things like that. Supporting the heroes and the brand and of course the mission. It's really great. Well, Bruce, as we close up here, as I like to do, I'll give you the last word. Is there anybody you'd like to single out or that we've forgotten to acknowledge or say thank you to, or if you just have, I'll give you the last word here.
Yeah. There's so many people that I'm not going to name names, but we have a couple gals in town that do quilts for the heroes every year. We've got a bunch of firemen that will usually help put on the Friday night meal and then put on the banquet for the Saturday night meal. Fire department lets us use the fire hall to do that in, so we don't have to rent a spot for it or anything. And there's 8 guides or so that have got dogs that just look forward to the event every year. And so many people, the American Legion does flag ceremony for the banquet and stuff. And there's a local called West River Transit that will go up with us to the airport and pick up the heroes and bring them back at no charge. And, there's just... It's a well-rounded community event that there's so many fingers in the pot that it's all what makes it happen.
Right. It's kind of like herding cats,
Yeah.
But in a good way. And I mean that in a good way, because if you give good people a mission, spirit and intent, task and purpose, they're going to do it. They're going to knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
And it gives them maximum degrees of freedom of action and taking the initiative and just stand back and watch the magic happen. It's so like what I always thought about philanthropy is that, it is exactly that. People giving of their time, their talents, and their energy, to make something happen, something good happen. And it's really impressive. And I can't wait to get up there and shake your paw and, get to know your family a little bit and see your countryside and enjoy that part of America, because I know it's great.
Yeah, no, like I said, you come up, bring your boys up some July, and I'll get you out on the lake and you can catch some fish. But again, it's just, everybody that we ask to help, I don't even get it out of my mouth, and they're saying absolutely, from the neighbors out on the farm. Yeah, we have enough land that we could hunt and probably have a successful hunt, but not nearly as successful as we do if we didn't have the neighbors that allow us to hunt their land as well. And you ask the people with the dogs, and I have some that will text me in the middle of summer and say, okay, what are the dates again? They want to get another calendar because they're coming.
Yeah. You know you're doing a good job when people start talking about next year when the event's not even over.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's so true. Wow. Well, I'm thankful and grateful and humbled by this and your work, and I know the heroes are, and I wish you the absolute best this winter. I hope that it's mild for you and that maybe you need some snow for the fields. I don't know.
We whatever. Can use some snow, but my wife and I are actually leaving next Thursday. We go down to Alabama, right on the Alabama-Florida line, and we spend 2.5 months or so down there.
Good for you. Good for you. Whereabouts?
We go to Orange Beach.
Okay. Cool. Well, very good. Well, then you're snowbirds a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
I know you've earned it. Yeah, well, hopefully this summer will, or this winter down here will be mild for you and enjoyable. And, you know, and I look forward to meeting you. Thanks for all you guys do out there. It's amazing. And you did a great job on the podcast. And I'm sure folks are just going to love hearing about your story and the great work you're doing, Bruce. Thank you very much.
And thank you. It's, Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation is definitely made a huge impact on my life with what you do. And it's very easy to put on this event knowing that you're going to have five heroes that are going to come and you can show them what North Dakota is all about and what pheasant hunting is all about.
That's so cool. Well, we're honored to do it, and it couldn't be done if it wasn't for, you know, a lot of wonderful people stepping up to the plate and really enriching this space, because that's what it's all about, is that, you know, that whole culture that is, in your case, you know, North Dakota.
Yeah.
Now, you can't replicate that in Florida. I can't replicate that in you know, New York City. Yeah. It is what it is, and that's what makes it so great. Plus, obviously, the resource, you know. So we're very fortunate to have you on the team and wish you the best of luck in year 9 as it comes around, and wish you a Merry Christmas, you know, happy holidays, and the best in the new year.
You as well.
All right, Bruce, thanks for your time. We're out.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the WWIA podcast. To learn more about the Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation and how you can get involved, please visit our website at wwiaf.org or follow us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. If you'd like to comment or offer feedback about our podcast, or if you have a suggestion for a future episode, please email us at podcast@wwiaf.org. Thank you for your support and for helping us honor, connect, and heal our combat wounded Purple Heart heroes through the power of the great outdoors.